Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to the Uranus Happens Show live here on Blog Talk Radio, powered by eastrology.tv. I'm Ernesto. I'm your host. I'll be here with you for the next hour, and we'll be doing some great Uranian astrology and psychic readings for everybody tonight. Veretta, I do believe you're on the line with me here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you great.
Perfect. All right. So, question. So, one of the things that we talk about a lot on the show is do the work, you know, like going through that process, that metamorphosis of reaching inside of yourself to change the aspects you don't like about to manifest what you want in the outside world, you know, as opposed to having the experience of just not doing anything and waiting for the other shoe to drop and then everything magically works itself out. That seems to be most people in today's world that, you know, they're not really inclined to wanting to do the work. So, you know, for those people out there, those souls that are really difficult to love, you know, like those people that we were, for the lack of a better term, we're just kind of stuck with them in our environment. Our soul obviously chose something that what we have to learn from this other person. But the experience of knowing them is pretty challenging for the most part. Now, for, you know, like a lot of people, that can be a very joyous occasion when that person finally crosses over and they're gone, and because it's, you know, like, okay, great, this thorn is no longer on my side. I don't have to be this way that I don't like being because this, you know, this awful influence is gone from my life. So question now becomes, when you have the life experience that, you know, I am doing all of the right work to change myself and to, you know, manifest the things that I want to out of life. But if the people in my environment are wanting to just remain stagnant and not do anything, that's their prerogative, because, you know, we all came here to do different things. So I'm not really getting on that. But the question becomes, how do I, as a person who's seeking to incite change, how do I handle this person who's in my environment who just wants to remain the same and keep doing things the old way? And, you know, they're probably hypercritical and mean the whole way along about what I'm doing. So how do you make the most out of that character in your environment when the only thing that you have running through your mind are the most evil thoughts that you can possibly have because you just want to make it go away?
Well, you know, it's really, there's a lot of reasons why it could be happening. So if it's related to what you're dealing with in the present, you have to know it will end eventually. You have to know it will go away. If you let it, if you don't perpetuate the problem and do whatever steps that are needed to let it leave naturally and let it go away. The problem is we respond to things like that in the time frame they're happening, which create ongoing problems with permanent MR or make us feel some kind of way. And that perpetuates and just, you know, continues the cranky. That's a lot what, you know, meditation or some type of practice would be handy to say, at least, letting you bide your time until the issue subsides enough that you know you're going to be okay. There really isn't one pat answer. There really isn't one tool per se to say, this is what you do to get past that. This is what you do to get over it. This is what you do to make it better. It doesn't work like that. The reality of it is your mentality and the way you utilize things is what will make it better, is what will make it go away. And really that won't make it go away. It just makes you better until it does. But again, when we're brought here, we do remember, we have to remember, or, you know, we don't know, and we don't have to remember anything. But the reality of it is we choose. We choose the environment that we need to help us do whatever we set out to do. And if one of those challenges may be to overcome a pissy attitude in life, then we're going to be given an ample opportunity to do that. Because the reality of it is it really is your perception, not your action. It's your perception of what happens to you that really create your everyday experience, your everyday mentality. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And, you know, another important distinction is that to a certain degree, not entirely, but we do essentially choose our thoughts in a sense. Like when I have a knee-jerk visceral reaction to somebody behaving poorly towards me, you know, I have the knee-jerk reaction, you know, that immediately gets dark and, you know, awful, and I just want to make this person go away, out of my breathing space, do what I need to do to shut that down, right? So I can go down, you know, like that whole thought process, or I can choose to go down some other thought process, depending on, you know, where I am in life and sort of what my environment's, how it's conditioning me. So to say, you know, like that, I have these unwanted thoughts, that's only true to an extent because, you know, like I'm also allowing them to stick around. You know, like I could do something to dispel that energy, but I'm choosing not to. So then that's when those thoughts get kind of challenging. So it is worth noting that when it comes to, you know, like our thoughts, at least in these scenarios, that we do choose them. And so it may not be necessarily the type of response that would be ideal, quote unquote, whatever that may look like for you. And so what happens then is the fact that because you're getting, you know, these less than optimal responses every time, you know, you're not really knowing how to process that information or how to process that event. And it becomes confusing. So then it begins to create a negative feedback loop that doesn't really need to be there. But again, you know, that's because I'm choosing to do this, whereas I could distract myself with something else or pull myself into this new direction that I've never done before, because that's definitely something different. I'm always of the belief that when we get stuck with something, it's because, you know, we're just remaining the same. And that that scary thing that we've been putting off for so long, what happens if we do that? It's really interesting what happens when we give ourselves permission to just live life and do the things that we feel are right for us. It's really surprising and quite funny, actually, how much the ego likes to try to convince ourselves of anything else except for what's right for us.
Right. And, you know, if we learn that early on, if we learn that that's the reality, that we can make what happens to us bad or better, when we live with that reality, then one of the first things that we learn to say when we are encountering problems and challenges is, what's the point of this? You know, is this really something I need to have a hard example on, or can I make it easier and walk away knowing what the, you know, end result should be without the struggle? We do. We can get to that point. Now, does that mean we're going to have every day in roses? No. Does mean the spiritual mean happy at all costs every day? No. You know, we are human, and as long as we have emotions and we're not a sociopath that can't feel or to some degree doesn't give a crap about anything anyway, we're going to experience emotion. We're going to experience pain. We're going to know what grief and sorrow and anger and disappointment and all that is. It really comes down to how we deal with it, you know, how we end up acting out on whatever it was that came our way, you know, and then that's at the end of our life, that's going to portray out in where we end up when we cross over. Because where we end up in spirit is where we are when we die, in the same mentality, in the same arena of types of people, in still learning the type of lesson that we wouldn't, you know, we just refuse to know here. And we learn to grow there. If we have to go ahead and amend whatever it was maybe that we did while we were here, or what we didn't do while we were supposed to, and just continue to live that way in spirit until, you know, whatever the changes to come that makes your consciousness and awareness different.
And remember, it is a fact that where this life ends, the next one picks up. And that's even supported, you know, in your chart that That second ring of information that we always look at, that's the solar arc directions, that's your soul in relation to the Earth's rotation on its axis. So when we look at that chart in your life and where you're headed, this is like your present, your soul's maturity. Like, I'm learning these lessons in my life. And so when we look at something, you know, like a loss or a crossing over of energy, you know, that transmutation of energy, what happens is that you can see the moments, the things that are happening in the native's life right as they're, you know, getting ready to move on. And then, you know, we see the death formula and that all checks out great. So the chart's over, right? Not really, because there's always the belief in Uranian astrology, at least. This is one of the things that makes us different than other types of astrology, is that the chart continues on. It's just in a different dimension of the chart. So it's not the one that we are necessarily used to. It's just continuing in some other form that's probably out in the ethers. And, you know, like, we can actually track where the soul is. We even have formulas for reincarnation. So we could, with the right amount of work, if somebody really wanted to pay a lot of money and do this, we could tease out all of the lifetimes that somebody's gone through and what those key themes are going to look like. So it's really quite interesting in Uranian astrology, at least, that we can see where somebody's life is at as they're getting ready to move on. And then once they do check out, well, the chart doesn't just stop. It doesn't just end itself. It continues to move on at that 1 degree per year. And then when the soul is ready to move on, you know, and say, okay, I'm ready to come back again, then you'll actually see that formula for incarnation that will show up in their original chart. So it's quite interesting. It's one of the things that I really like about what we do, is that I can actually back it up with some scientific, you know, proofing that these events are, and these things are actually real.
And so, I love the fact, you know, having been a medium for so long, with the experiences I've had and a hospice provider, having sat with people more than, you know, just one or two, enough to create an awareness and understanding of the process when people do check out from this reality to the next, and what's to come. I've always found it very awesome to know that they have experiences that allow them to process. So, you know, have heart that when it comes time, you'll have choice, and put your fear at bay that things during transition are going to be scary, because it really just is not.
You know, and the catharsis that we think we're going to feel by watching somebody's soul get tortured for what they did to us while on this planet, we probably don't want to know what that's all about, because if the human mind was in any way at all possible of comprehending such a concept, I'm pretty sure that would be, like, really scarring. So, you know, like, we had a caller a few weeks ago that they had a situation in their life where they were treated very badly by another individual, and they just wanted to fixate on, is this person going to come back? Am I ever going to see this person again? Well, something I've kind of figured out through my own experiences recently is the more that I fixate on, you know, the outcome or this thing that I want, the loss of a person, you know, that this person is going to go away, that I don't have to deal with them anymore, the more that I have to focus on that, the more that person will become a thorn in my side. So you really just have to walk away from it. And, like, I even had an experience totally different from what we're talking about, but I'm in this phase in life where I'm talking to a lot of different people, you know, like going out on dates, being more social than what I ever have in the past. And so as that time started to open itself up to me, and I was being hit up a lot more often than what I ever was before, the one thing that I can say is I quit caring. I just didn't give a damn anymore what happened. If I was single, if somebody asked me out, if I was in a couple, just did not care. And the moment that I just gave up all of my attachments and want for this thing that I'm not really sure that I know that I need in my life, then it just kind of exploded. And then it became very difficult for me to keep up with. So that whole concept of non-attachment, there really is something to that. And it does a lot to our minds in getting us to disengage from that thought rumination process that we're all so familiar with, that we think about all of the crazy things at 5 o'clock in the morning when we're not sleeping. You know, we can break up that thought process or that thought pattern just by going outside of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's where the distraction comes in. You know, you have to break up that thought process. If you can't, you need to distract yourself away from it and not focus, not fixate, not obsess on it.
Well, you know, it's even like, you know, when you quit smoking, that you think to yourself in those first couple of days about how difficult that transition is going to be, that I'm going to be like smoke free and I'm going to give up all of, you know, the lifestyle habits that were associated with what I did in the past. You get the craving and then you think to yourself, oh, I'd really like to do that. But then you distract yourself, like you play a game or you look at something on Reddit or you have a glass of water, whatever it is. And I remember in the show Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, she had this thing that just give yourself 10 more seconds, just count out 10 more seconds. And that was actually how she got herself through the doomsday cult at the beginning of the show, was, you know, like she never knew what the heck was going on in that underground bunker, but she just kept counting out 10 more seconds. And by doing that over the course of several years, finally she ended up in the present moment and all of that despair and pain, you know, that went away. So my thing is, when I'm feeling sort of like, I guess, tempted by whatever thing that I'm wanting to get involved with or distracted by, I just say, let me do this other thing for a little bit. And, you know, that feeling goes away. It really does. And it may come back, but I can always distract myself again.
Yep. That's perfect. That is absolutely perfect.
And you know, it's important for us to kind of pay attention to these things, because if we're aware that there's an issue or that there's a problem, you know, like we kind of want to nip that in the bud while we can, because, you know, at least on this program, we try to specialize ourselves or distinguish ourselves by being experts in damage control, because that's kind of what we do. Like the chart can give us some really great to, you know, some things that you might need to take a look at, or, you know, Veretta can give you some other insight as to, you know, things that you just may want to consider as far as life is concerned. And that's all great and that's all fine, but only if we pay attention to it. You know, like I know that I may have, you know, a minor problem with X thing in my life right now, and it may not seem all that bad, so I'm not going to do anything about it. But I also acknowledge that it is an issue that I'd kind of like to work on. So maybe there's some validity to that. I'm not too sure what that is, but what happens if I work on this part of myself that I've been neglecting for so long? I'd much rather have that conversation today when I'm still in charge, as opposed to in the future when somebody else is having to make that decision for me, because now there's complications that I have created through my own inaction, that I've now got some health problem or some other issue that was never there before. But if I had chosen to, you know, take care of X when I was first thinking about it, I would have never had that problem. So it's an important distinction that, you know, we really just don't want to let things slide off completely. I'm always a fan of sticking your head in the sand, but to a certain extent, we still have to do the things that really matter to take care of ourselves, because it's, you know, despair and regret are those two things that are very hard to shake off. And good luck trying to get a second chance when you're in those situations.
Right. So when you take care of it initially, you know, it just takes that right off the plate. You don't even have to juggle it anymore.
It does. So, Beretta, what are some instances where, like, you've worked with people? Because, I mean, I'm sure you encounter this quite often, that, you know, you give somebody a warning about X, that, you know, that this is something that they need to work on, and then they say, oh, no, I don't want to, or, you know, like, or that's too scary, or, you know, like, I just can't. And then in the future, they, you know, have everything turned upside down. It's a pretty common experience,
well,
right?
Yeah, it really is. It really is, because people don't have the faith in themselves, and or they really don't want to try, but they want to make it look good. You know, they want to be the victim. So people give them the out to say, oh, baby, it's all right. You know, we understand. The reality of it is they didn't want to do it to begin with, whatever it is. The fact is also, when I hear I can't, it may also signal they're not ready. They're not ready to do whatever it is that they're, you know, wanting or saying and protesting about. The reality of it is all I can do is plant a seed. And at this time, I'm more than comfortable in planting the seed, watering it a little bit, and then seeing that if someone is really going to rip that plant right out of the ground, root and all, just because, you know, if I let it grow, I'm going to have to take care of it. I walk away. I'm very comfortable in knowing that there's really nothing more that I can or should try to do with this individual at this time, not in that department anyway. People are individuals. They've got their own specific background. They may, you know, have many valid reasons why they don't feel they can do what they can do. And if they're not willing to let me hold them by the hand and honestly help them make it work or make it better, then I'm not in a place to say, okay, I'll carry you because I got nothing in my life and I'm bored out of my mind. I can't do that. But I'll tell you, I really did try as a young adult and to overcompensate. You know, I would stay and I would neglect myself and I would martyr myself in the situation of, no, I can help you no matter how much damage it does to me. And finally, I learned to say, no, it's not going to work like that. Here's the deal. When you're ready, since it's not today, and if I'm available, when you think you are, come back around. But I'm not in it to try to carry you nor try to convey that you can do something that you believe you can't, because it's just me pushing boulders up a hill, and I don't have time for that. It's not that I don't want to. I would love to see everybody succeed, and if my body could carry them, I would, but A, I do them a big disservice by carrying them to that degree, because they're here to learn. And if they need help, then gradually they'll ask for it. If they don't, they won't get it. If I'm there, I'll help them, no doubt. But most definitely, I can comfortably now walk away from a situation where someone really just wants to be the victim and not want to change your situation in any manner.
So how do we deal with it then when people are too afraid? Because that seems to be a thing that's becoming increasingly worse in our society, that people are just more afraid at a general level to do anything. And I know it has nothing at all to do with offending. I think part of it has to do with offending, but it's also just the fact that, people don't want to be accountable for their own actions. You know, it's, again, the biggest problem in the world. That's what it all comes down to.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And so if we were accountable for our action and responsible for our action, then we think a whole lot more about what we're doing. Therefore, when we're doing it, we're not going to be quite so afraid, because we've already covered all the bases on why we're going to do it and what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. So being fearful about it just goes away. That's not even a consideration. You know what I mean? But right now, we are so secluded. With things like our media platforms that allow us to stay in our home and talk to people and interact and engage in projects and engage in anything through video, we don't have to take the chance of going out and interacting with people. Therefore, we are going to be afraid, because now we don't have the convenience of shutting down a computer or closing our laptop or hanging up the phone when someone gets you about what we had to say. We have to be accountable for standing there in person. We can't just shut it down and hide. So our entire society at this point, in a way, has gotten, oh, no, you hurt my feelings, I don't like you, shame on you, and go away, instead of work through the problem and why it hurt their feelings and giving the other person an opportunity to understand and continuing society in that manner to say we're building our infrastructure, our foundation again with our social networks instead of tearing it down and secluding ourselves because, you know, pandemics and this and that and everything else keeps us away from everybody else. So we are fearful of living life in a manner outside of our little shell. And that takes us, it makes it harder for us to continue to build a network, it makes it harder for us to reach out and ask for help because we don't have anybody. We don't got no peeps out there, you know, that we can see in person and interact with on a regular basis. About 50% of our population post, let's say, social media, Meetup platform, not Meetup, MySpace when it first started, and then Craigslist, and then all the things that you could reach out anonymously and touch someone with. About 50% of our population now don't really know, let's say, how to be socially appropriate. You know, they're adequate, totally on. Respect and any kind of boundary is just almost but erased at this point. And that's proved by the things we see in, you know, public. Go ahead.
Here's what's problematic about that is that, you know, we live in such a society that now when you're beaten down and broken in the ditch and you need to have somebody to talk to and you don't got anybody, you can go out to Facebook, you can go out to Reddit, you can go out to any of those types of platforms and, you know, just post, you know, something that's just a whole bunch of venting about something really terrible that happened to you to see what other, you know, sympathy or pity or support you can get from people. This seems to be a thing, you know, like when, and it really kind of bugs me. It's very difficult for me not to judge the people who do this because when I'm put in these situations where I actually have something that's emotionally scarring and I need somebody to talk to, usually I seek a therapist professionally just because I don't have anybody that I can really talk to. I mean, there's you, Beretta, but, you know, like you and I work together now, so it's kind of it's sort of treads into a different territory now. So the whole thing is that when people go out there and they want to vent on the internet about whatever just happened to them, I think to myself, I think I want to do the same thing. Let me go and create some throwaway account that, you know, has nothing at all to do with any of my personal details. And I'm going to go out and write this really long story that details all of this emotional pain and abuse that I just endured and how I don't have anybody to talk to. So I'm just going to see what pity I can get out of the internet. I just don't do that. You know, it's like, it's so sad. It's like, you know, go out to a bar, you know, like, go do something to engage with society. I'm not one of these people anymore that seems to be satiated by hiding behind a screen because I don't have to deal with the pain and, you know, the harshness of the world and people. So I know a lot of people are really like that these days, that they would much rather, you know, troll people on dating apps than go out to, I don't know, the mall and make fun of people, let's say, because that's what we used to do when I was in school, like, right? Because there were no such thing as dating apps. Like, that wasn't really a thing. So it's difficult, you know, in today's times that people don't really have the channels or the platforms to be able to express their emotions. And then what makes it worse and actually makes me very sad is that we have this whole thing in American society that, like, toxic masculinity, I'm sure you know what this is all about, where, like, young men, usually under the age of 20, they're just sort of taught through society that, like, we don't talk about feelings, we don't talk about emotions. And by the way, it's probably not a great idea to be friends with other guys. You should seek out other women, probably the people that you're in relationships with. You know, these are the people that you want to talk to. It's really unfortunate that this has become a thing. And then what happens that's a lot worse is that you have these guys that are in their 40s and 50s today that are just kind of like, my life sucks so bad, you have no idea how close I am to putting a gun in my hand, because they just feel so shut out that nobody's listening. So, I mean, society is really broken in many, many different ways. And so I'm really looking forward to everything finally breaking in a good way, so we can have the real change to this new paradigm that we're all waiting for, because the current system, it's barely hanging on by a thread and it's just not doing well.
So to be frank about that, I have been there where what you just stated. And not just me, but people kind of like me in this same age, maybe a little older. We've been there for 20 years, honey. We're waiting patiently and sometimes very impatiently, screaming, just push the damn button. You know, we need change to create a better foundation. But the reality of it is there are not enough people with solid foundations. The country were to go to hell in a handbasket, things were to change globally, or some catastrophe were to occur that would create a need for everyone to understand they have to band together, we'd be in trouble. Our infrastructure is not set up for that quite yet. We'd be absolutely ruled and governed by whatever's left of our authority system, which would be crap. We would not be able to sustain ourselves, our infrastructure, as far as our food, our water, our shelter, our clothing, all that's going to go right down the tubes. We're not going to have gas. We're not going to have electricity. We're not going to have internet. And we do not have enough safeguards in place so that when that happens, the people that are actually capable of running the country in a peaceful, literal manner are too few and far between to be able to really rule or lead appropriately. So what's going to happen is you're going to have a lot of people, unknown people, that are going to be thrust in a position of leadership. Some are going to be good, some are not. And that's what will dictate whether or not we can recreate a new routine. But a lot of us that are used to our comforts, that count on our comforts, that rely on our conveniences are going to be in trouble because they don't know how to exist without the things that we're going to lose when stuff goes to pot initially. And unless we're self-sufficient or ready kind of on that, like, you know what you can do to protect yourself for an indefinite period of time, unless you're ready right now for that, you don't know when the whatever's coming. So you don't know what you need to have. You won't know until that time frame comes. You can have every preparation in the world, a bunker, the whole nine yards, and be caught unprepared and not able to ever rely on what you have. So it's going to boil down to the character of the person that recreates this country, not the stockpile that they've amassed. And that's what we're looking at right now. We need to be looking at the character of people that have resources or at least the know-how to create, to make us steadfast again at some point.
You know, the very best thing that could ever happen to humanity would be a war against aliens. You know why? Because every single person on this planet, regardless of color or race or gender or anything else, we are all banding together immediately right now because we have a common enemy, the aliens. It doesn't really matter how we take them down. We're just going to do it. It would be the most glorious thing to ever happen to this planet is if we had an alien invasion, because human beings would be forced to put all of their differences aside and actually get along. What would happen if we had to do that? The whole planet would blow itself up.
Well, it probably pretty much would. We would have pockets of areas, you know, that probably would survive very well with that because they can get along with each other. And then we'll have people killing each other because they can't get along and the aliens will never get a chance to. So, you know what I mean? It will definitely thin out the herd, most definitely. It would be definitely interesting to see what would happen.
That's one thing that wars are really good at doing is, besides, you know, like being essentially a reset to the economy, what the other nice thing about having a war, wherever it may be, is that, you know, everybody has a common enemy. So that kind of brings people together. So, you know, like I've said, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, that unfortunately in the near future, a lot of people are going to have to get hurt in this country before we start to see the actual change that we're all wanting to see. And we're going to be heading into that territory here pretty soon. I think that next year and the following year, definitely by 2024, you guys, I'm just going to say this now, that by 2024, 2025, we're going to be hitting a point in the world and the global economy that the only people that will really have money are going to be corporations and companies. So, you know, people that cut your paychecks, they're going to be the only ones that are getting out ahead. Whatever is happening to this global economy, you know, like that's going to be so savage that you and I, average consumers, you know, we're going to be able to afford rent utilities and food, just like what it is right now, but it'll be more strained than what it ever has in the past. So that's going to be coming up over the next like 2 to 3 years. So mark my words now that this is really a time when we still want to get ourselves set up for what's about to come down the turnpike, because it's going to be very real for a lot of people. And everybody will be affected in some way. So I always like to address these things when you guys give us a call on the show here. Veretta, I know that you and your work and what you do, you know, with metaphysical ministry, that you're probably going to start to get a lot more called in the near future just because of people very simply unable to deal with these really challenging energies.
That's true. And unfortunately, that is the case. Not only with, you know, hardships and catastrophes, but I get calls, typically I will get calls around the election time frames, always around the end of the year, the beginning of the year, and birthdays. And people do want to know when there's an uncertainty. I got crazy phone calls out of, from the pandemic. So yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I do get besieged with people that just are uncertain as to what to do, how to prepare, you know, will they survive? What do they need to know? And I give them what spirit brings. I can't do anything other than give them that and hope that it's enough for them to go and, you know, by the time we hang up, have a little bit of peace or presence of mind. I think they might be okay. And they are concerned. I get people calling for any various states of emotional condition, from, you know, slightly concerned to hysteria, just freaked out, crying, hysterical, you know, please help me on the phone kind of thing. And so, yeah, that definitely sends people in a panic, and they want to know. They need to know. Even just a little bit of something will help them through the situation. And that's what my goal is. Even if it's just a little bit of something that will make it a little bit easier for them, I try to feel out the energy, you know, just to see what I can bring that will make it okay, whatever that may be. And I don't lie to anybody. I don't make stuff up, but I search out what I can as the shiny in the dark spot, so it gives them a glimmer of hope. That's what my call is, anyway, is to give them that glimmer of hope.
Well, I mean, and really that's sort of all we can do, because, I mean, isn't that all, at the end of the day, isn't that all we really want? You know, like if we don't know what's happening coming down the turnpike, you or me, doesn't matter if we're, you know, if we can read the future or not. It's just the fact that nobody likes the uncertain, you know, question mark, those big things that we're all so scared of, like, what is that? And, you know, how do I get there? How do I navigate this landscape? Because this is all very new and eerie to me. So I would think that anybody, regardless of who you are or your life experience, that, you know, something that we can do in, you know, in terms of what we do in working with people is, you know, to empower and to uplift, so that, you know, even in these uncertain times, you still feel like that there's at least some type of game plan or, you know, guide words that are going to make the whole experience, you know, not so scary. Because for a lot of people, you know, when we operate out of a place of fear, then what happens is we're not really being the best version of ourselves. And we react viscerally to things, and we end up doing things that we normally just wouldn't do, because that's not us. But because, you know, we come out of a place of fear, or the fear of missing out, then we behave irrationally. So, like, fear of missing out, they obviously love to do that a lot in cell phone games. So, or you think to yourself, oh, if I don't make this purchase right now, then I'm not going to see this item again in my game for, like, the next 6 or 8 months. And that may have a really negative impact on my progression and what I'm doing right now. If you're a gamer, you understand that there's really a lot of validity to the fear of missing out in terms of manipulating players into opening their wallets, doing these kinds of things. So it does work in that way. But, you know, when we're just talking about, like, you and me on an everyday sort of on an everyday mundane basis, then that fear of missing out, then that it's it's not as striking as like when you're doing something like, let's say, cell phone gambling or something equivalent to it. But still, it's just the fact that I don't know what's coming up here. And that's still kind of scary because I'm going to plan for X, but then when Y happens to me, everything that I did for X has to be thrown away.
So,
go ahead. Beretta?
No, I'm just agreeing. Yeah, most definitely.
So that's one of the things that we like about our show is that, you know, we can, and Beretta and I both play so well off of each other that we can see one thing and, you know, I can validate it in your chart and really give you an idea of what's happening. So that's one of the reasons why I really like working together is the fact that we can have this really nice dialogue that enhances your life by decoding that unknown scary thing that we don't understand and then giving us some context about like what the story around it actually is and what you can expect based off of your own actions, because you know that's all empowering. That's what we like, is, you know, knowing, walking into something with at least, you know, some sense of security or confidence. That feels much better than the alternative.
Yeah, most definitely.
So, Beretta, so I think we're actually going to close out the show early here tonight. We will be back with you guys on Sunday at 12 p.m. That'll be our 2 hours show. So we'll be back with you guys at noon, Arizona or Mountain Standard Time on, this will be the 9th, which will be Sunday of October. I do want to thank everybody for joining us here tonight out in the archives on our Blog Talk Radio show or even on YouTube, wherever you may be. Be sure to subscribe, like, and share. We love seeing those thumbs up, and we also love to get the feedback from everybody. It's a little bit of a different format tonight to have some conversations about spiritual things and a little bit about everything, but it's been nice. So we look forward to catching up with you guys on our Sunday program. We will see you guys then. Beretta, as always, thank you so much for joining me. It's always a pleasure.
Always. Thank you. Good night.
Okay, we will catch you guys soon. Until next time, good luck and Godspeed. For all other things relating to astrologer or astrology, be sure to check out eastrologer.tv, and you can check out Beretta at berettavision.com.
Okay.
Good luck and good night.